the President.
Secretary General,
secretaries, as Mr. Rogers has told you, we have some problems from a political standpoint in the United States on UN support. You know, well, it's just the UN, it's the whole attitude toward foreign involvements, engagements, aid, and so forth and so on. And on the other hand, we're trying to be as helpful and cooperative with the UN as we can be. We have particularly in those very inadequately publicized areas where the UN does such an outstanding job, the non-so-called peacekeeping areas, which we feel that they're our effort to as well as the peacekeeping area, which of course gets in the room. Tell me what problems do you have that you would like for us to consider? Just take a look.
You've done a very good job. We have to go off a good side on the financial aspect of it. He's cut back a good deal already.
I know it's a story from the Secretary General of the Picture.
No. I think that the
Mr. President, first of all, I wish to thank you very much for giving me a chance to talk to you so soon after taking over this good job. I appreciate it very much because I think it is extremely important for me and of course for the United Nations to restore a very close cooperation between the United States government and the United Nations Network for the Declaration. I think this is, in my opinion, one of the most important questions I have to solve. Because I know that the image of our organization is very much down because of a number of things and people are contacted with the pieces. But I think that we could do a lot about it. And for this, I need your help. I have certainly decided. I know that some of the newspapers thought that I am not ready to do something about the United Nations, that I should let things go as they are. Well, I can assure you that I never did it in my whole career, and I'm absolutely decided to do something about it. And I think what we have to do is to restore confidence of the world opinion in the United Nations, and especially in this country. I'm reading the newspapers. Well, the comments are not very encouraging, and it is not only here, it is in my country, for instance, very common. The comments are negative, people say, especially in connection with the events on the subcontinent, etc. I mean, also, even in the question of China, the government was criticized that they did not inform the public earlier about our attitudes, etc. So I just want to mention that I am fully aware of the bad shape we are in right now. But I think there is no alternative. I'm deeply convinced, Mr. President, that we should not give up this administration because there is no alternative, and I think we will need it in the future because we will be confronted with many, many crises in the future. And may I add one thing? I think the danger existing now in the UN is that because of the decreasing interest of the United States in the United Nations, we can create a vacuum in the United Nations. And this vacuum will be used either by the Chinese or by the Russians. I think other big powers will profit of this situation if we are not doing something about it. And I think this is only one of the reasons why I think it would be most important to re-establish, to restore the confidence of the American public in the United Nations. And what I have in mind is to start with the administrative financial problems in order to prove, in order to show the public, the governments, the member states, that we are really ready to do something to keep our house in order. And then, with this restored confidence, so that people say, well, finally they do something about themselves, that they will then be more ready to cooperate with us in the political field also. This doesn't mean that I keep aside the political progress on the continent, that this is the main task of the United Nations. But what I mean is that by doing a good job in our own house, that the public will then get to gain more confidence in us and will be more ready, especially the governments of the member states, to cooperate with the United Nations. Well, this is in short the situation as I see, and may I add that I personally deeply appreciate your main line of foreign policy, the fact that you opened the door to a worldwide cooperation. I only mentioned the China, your China policy, and the number of other things. Yeah, I may also add that, for instance, in the question of the war on the subcontinent, you saw that you were supported by 103 other countries. So the decision was right.
Instructed already
$1 million for this year, the budget 72. So we started already to do something in this respect, and I'm hopeful that we will be able to overcome this purely financial administrative problem in order to can then more concentrate on the political questions. And here, of course, I hope that the United Nations can play again a more important role, especially in peacekeeping fields. Take, for instance, now the subcontinent, Mr. President. I think here your country can do more through channeling your help
through the UN.
Because the political situation, I had talks with McNamara and Schweitzer last week, and invited them to...
They're coming back pretty soon. The McNamara's out there now.
After this visit. And they have the problem that they say as long as Bangladesh is not recognized, it is for them rather difficult to do something. So here, the United Nations are in a difficult situation, but we have really done a lot in this respect, in the humanitarian relief field. But we want to concentrate now more on the rehabilitation and reconstruction sector. And here, of course, we need your help, Mr. President, to be very grateful if you could assist us in this great undertaking.
We have, let me say first that in terms of our own attitude toward the United Nations, needless to say, the United States has indicated its support of the United Nations through the fact that we are its biggest contributor, but we should be, we are the wealthiest, but also we have shown our support by our cooperation in many other ways, and we have seldom used the veto. We have tried to work through the United Nations, and we should continue to. The second thing I think we have to bear in mind is that despite the problems that we have of, in public opinion, and I would be less than candid if I were not to say public opinion wise, there's a lot of frustration, disillusion, disenchantment about the UN due to the fact that, due to no fault of the UN in a way, that too many people, when the UN was formed, and since it was formed, believed that the UN would be the instrument which could solve differences between great powers. It could never do that. As you say, it can bend them now and then. But where the great powers are concerned, more often than not, they are going to consult their interests. If it serves their interest, they will let the UN play a role. If it doesn't, they will have to push it aside. On the other hand, who is to say how many times the UN has acted in areas that might have eventually, without their intent, involved the great powers, acted to prevent confrontations? See, the difficulty is, of course, that, and this is something that everybody should say when he talks about the UN, that the UN's failures are always highly publicized. Its successes seldom get much publicity, because a failure ends in a war, and a success ends in peace, or avoiding a war. And avoiding a war is never too much of a story. Catalogus to make that speech quite often. He says, look, I think he goes through a whole litany of 12, 15 things. If we did not have the UN, we might have had trouble. Now, all over the world today, the superpowers rub against each other. Some places they rub very, very close, and enough to ignite something. The Middle East is a case in point. That's an area where, as you know, we work very closely with the UN. Recognizing that the UN may have its limitations there. In other areas of the world, like Africa, the rubbing is not quite as electric, and you can get away with it without with just a little rhetoric, not above and all the rest, without anything beyond that. On the other hand, I think which is always the case of positions of this sort,
very great,
frankly, challenge and difficulty. And of course, at the other side of the coin is always enormous opportunity. On the terms of challenge and difficulty, let me say, you will have the support of the United States. No, every administration here will support the UN. I mean, we will consider the financial things, and we try to work through the UN. We believe in the organization. I mean, those of us in positions of responsibility, Secretary of State, and of course our ambassador, we have problems, and we catch the devil from our congressional friends, and they'll make some pretty rough speeches, but the UN has support. Second point, however, you're coming in at a time when the PRC is in, on the one hand, that expands it to a world organization, and on the other hand, it brings an element of great divisiveness in the UN, because the PRC and the Soviet Union are going to be at each other, and they're going to have at each other in the UN, and they are going to cause you far more problems than we. We recognize, too, I would say, that your position must be one of strict neutrality among the great powers and between the great powers, the two world here involved. And we understand that you've got to walk that tightrope between the PRC and the Soviet, between the United States and the others, that we should be involved. We are in a rather curious position at the present time where our relations with the Soviet are better than PRC's, and our relations with the PRC are better than the Soviet's. Who would ever have thought that was possible? That, of course, comes full circle. Maybe there's more of an opportunity here in the UN than we have realized. Maybe there's a need for a broker, which is really what you are. Now, speaking of the dangers, in other words, the dangers due to the fact that the PRC is in, and that's going to have a lot of rancor and debate and hell raising and the rest, the lessening procedure is also an opportunity. We all had a great deal of respect and affection for Hutton, the former Secretary General. But toward the end, as would always be the case for a man in a position that long, things seemed to get beyond his control. The events controlled him rather than his seeming to control the events. And he left at the right time. I mean, the right time, and he was wise to see that. And now you come in. I would not presume to try to give you advice. If I were in your position, I would remember that your first year, your first 2 years, will make or break. I mean, they're looking for strong leadership there. They're looking for a different kind of leadership than the former Secretary General's able to provide. If you simply are sort of a caretaker, trying to avoid trouble and the rest, you go right down the tube. But if, on the other hand, you have already demonstrated through your actions that there's a new bloom, and you're trying to have the UN, and you're strengthening the United States, and strengthening the support around the world, this can have a very salutary effect. I think, for example, that you're speaking, recognizing that you naturally are not, that you have to speak in a way, but Hutton used to speak on occasion around this country. I think you're speaking on occasion would be quite helpful.
Oh, yes.
I think you're speaking, as you have, I think, from time to time, on television would be quite helpful. If people could see, I mean, it's going to be tough. You've got to be very skillful, which you obviously are, to get it to follow that track so that you don't have the Russians or the Chinese that are criticizing you. We'll try to keep our mouth shut. And of course they'll get you in the middle of Rhodesia, and there are minefields all over the world. But at the present time, let me put it this way, we don't want to make your job any harder. But we do have a domestic political situation and view of these things. We'll try to help on the financing. The Secretary has agreed with me on this, and we're looking to see whether we can make that payment in July a little bit chunk. I don't think you can start earlier because of a fiscal problem, but as far as the money is concerned, we're committed to the money, you get the money, and you'll help in other ways. I think that, however, it would make our job a little irritating. The fact that people will say, well, we've got a new man in here, and he's absolutely fair to everybody concerned. We don't want you to, you cannot be pro-American. If you're pro-American, the rest of the world will kill you. On the other hand, there were times, speaking quite candidly, that the former Secretary General, without intending to, got himself into the position of being anti-American. And that was unfortunate, see, because that hurt the UN, to hurt him, hurt the UN. And I think that you're talking here to people that know your problem, and the rest of you don't want you to do anything that ties you to the Yankee tail, which you must not do, which you cannot do. But it'd be very helpful if you could take that line, which says, now look here, we're trying to have an absolute fairness and neutrality and so forth. And don't you agree, George?
Totally.
I don't know, what are you running into? You're around the country.
Well,
what are the questions you get?
The Secretary General and I have spoken about it, and as much as he's, been through the political wars, he's very much aware of that, and he knows that we feel strongly that we have a tough public relations problem. And one of the things that I think that you put your finger on is terribly important is the fact that the follow through on these wonderful things he started, this streamline play that cut down on consultants, the whole bureaucracy and financial thing, I think, can do more to get him the support that President Nixon wants to have. We've discussed it. He and I have a relationship where we can talk very, very frankly, and we're going to keep it that way. And I've told him that sometimes we'll be madder than hell at him, and sometimes he'll be furious at me, but we're going to keep it so we have a... and he started off, and he's done something I thought you might be interested in, is that when he's been through the political war, the first thing he did, the secretary, is a low ebb in terms of, course, when you get a new man, you know, they're going to be fired, and started going through different floors in that building. And then the couple of that was some strong edicts on streamlining. So I think the Secretary General shares your view, sir, about the problem in the United States. He determined it is something. He made a couple of darn good TV things to start with. He said the right thing that will help us as we get along the hill. And I can't think of anything more to add than what you've said. And I think we'll intend to not harass him, but to stay in close touch.
Thank you very much, because I really think that what you said, Mr. President, is absolutely in line with my thinking of what has to be done, and I shall make a great effort in showing the public that there is leadership bringing in, that I really want to do something. Whether I'm criticized or not, I know that I shall be criticized, because
he's probably going to be interested in his views of the press. I think that one in the beginning. Secretary General, I talked about it at length, but as he started going through these, President knows what we're talking about, but as he goes, started going through these things, look, here's an edict, here's how we're going to streamline this, it's going to
be fine. I have an idea,
which I know is from a maybe financial standpoint, a logistical standpoint, will not work, but it seems to me that the United Nations could possibly gain something with a device that we have used very effectively with our cabinet here. We have had cabinet meetings in other parts of the country. We've gone to Los Angeles, to the War Office, Chicago, particularly for the domestic side. And it, believe me, it has an enormous impact in other parts of the country. Here in Washington, nobody cares as much about me. It's just business as usual. It seems to me that the New York identification of the UN is being tied there and so forth. I know it's necessary. It must be its headquarters in Australia, but that has some of its liabilities. You know, there are around this world. You think of the OAU. You think of goods. And of course, that's one of your liabilities, naturally. You, Tom, had the
foundation, Mike.
And you're a European, and that's one of the reasons you're going to have to tell. We understand that. But, on the other hand, I'm just thinking that, you think about it, but in some way to get the UN so that the world can realize, belongs to the whole world, not just here in this country.
Well, we have already now started this meeting of the Security Council in Addis Ababa.
I saw that.
It's a very nice place now, and I'm flying to Addis tomorrow already. So this is already in mind, this is idea, and of course we could have other meetings in other countries. The problem only is that it costs money. We have criticized immediately the New York Times ranking, criticized us heavily for having decided to go with the Security Council to Addis Ababa and to hold a meeting there because the cost is about $100,000.
Yeah, well, they have criticized
you
either way.
Yeah, but I think it's a good...
Well, anyway, it's making out of the budget. And also, it's kind of like I just think, for example, how the world competes to have the Olympic Games. Why? Because it's a matter of enormous prestige to have all the nations of the world together to win their games. I mean, Munich, the whole world would come to Munich. So they think, I mean, if I were to take conventions, I mean, we look at political conventions. All the cities of this country compete for the political conventions. They want them there. I have time to think. I just get in the idea of just put it in the back of your mind. I'm inclined to think that it would be a very exciting thing, first for some other parts of the world to see the UN, and second, very salutary for UN delegates to see other parts of the world.
Do you mean to hold the General Assembly?
Try something. I don't know whether that would work. Maybe you may.
But we did in Paris. It was twice in
Paris.
But then it was given up because it was rather expensive. But we are interested. The country doesn't compete.
Maybe you're Security Council. But I do know this, that the taking the show on the road with modern television communications, and satellite and all the rest, it's a great thing to do.
What do you think, Bill? Mr. Cannon, the couple of thoughts I have, we can talk about, but it seems to me that you're starting just right and has to be more businesslike. The American people think it's sort of a lot of nonsense, and they think you're spending money much too fast, and it's all right there for us to see, and they say, what are the results of this? What's happening? What are we getting out of it?
Too much talking and
too
much like,
yes, and it's true that if you can seem to be more businesslike, you're doing that in terms of money, and if you can publicize your achievements, in what does the person say? You publicize all these figures, but then you don't have a very effective way of publicizing your achievements, not only in the terms of preventing war.
How many authority has that? How many other
authorities are not authorities
after the war? That type of thing, if you could figure out some ways to publicize that, I'm not sure taking the General Assembly on the road is a good idea because it's not like the Olympics. It's not like the Olympics. You see something.
Yeah.
The General Assembly is sort of, so people are here. On the other hand, I think the president's point is very good in that if you can publicize your achievements, if there's some way to take the show on the road so that when you're peaceful, the combat, disease, all these other things, if people can see that.
Yeah, one thing, Bill, that I've encouraged, I mean, Hammersfield, had a great reputation as a UNer because of his travels. Remember, he was
now he's under
and I'm not sure that's a good idea, but it seems that maybe a group or just trying to search for some way that you could really help. Take, for example, the subcontinent, and if that's the way it works out with this huge refugee entity, his work through the UN, which I understand we're going so far, but if it is, then we ought to get a tremendous publicity whack out of that.
A lot of credit for that.
The UN did it, see?
You
pushed everybody. That people contributed that otherwise weren't going to, and so forth. Usually they run in there and say, what's the United States doing? We found that in India, Pakistan, before the war broke out, that we had committed $500 million, which is more than all the rest of the world combined. Now, we're glad to do it, but there's something you're going to climb here.
I did already announce that I want to go to the Paris Talks. As I said, I'm not interested in opening ceremonies, etc. I want to go to the other spots to see with my own eyes what is going on, etc. This I will
mean, take with you your top secretariat people that have responsibilities in those areas.
Of course, Mr. President, may I touch upon the Middle East just for a moment? Because as you know, I asked Jan to go to Senegal to see the president and also the president of the OAU, the Mauritanian president. This is a group of 10 who tries to be helpful in the Middle East. We got an invitation from Senegal. Senegal asked me to send Jan to him, and when I discussed the matter with Jan, I suggested that he should also see the president of Mauritania. He is capacity as chairman of the group of 10 and also as president of the OAU. Now, Jan will go there at the end of this week, and I would suggest that perhaps he could come to Washington before he goes to Senegal in order to discuss the matter with the Secretary of State and his advisors, so that we can perhaps coordinate a little his proceedings. You see, the Africans came to me and told me that they are worried. Their prestige is not very much in work. The four heads of state have presented their report, and nothing came out of it because it was not accepted. So they are very worried about their prestige and want to be active, want to be helpful. That is, of course, the reason why they invited Yarin to see them. They even let me know through their ambassador in New York that Senegal wants to discuss a number of things with Yarin which he cannot put on paper. So apparently they have certain ideas, I don't know. But I think it is helpful because I don't think that we can expect a big the solution for the next future. I'm rather skeptical about it. But at least if we create the impression that we are letting things go, I think this initiative to consult with the Africans on this matter will perhaps help us to overcome this gap which will come. I think we are unable to get much power within the next few months in this respect, neither in the question of your famous plan, with the United Nations. I think it is now not the right time. But I think it is helpful that we contact these African heads of state and actually coordinate this with the Secretary of State.
Let me say, the Secretary is in charge of the police. And I think, frankly, we've done it. Well, that's a high road to high wire, and the problem there is keeping the truce now, and of course beyond that to get maybe some kind of talking started. Whether it's, I don't know, you want to get it too close to the time, if they talk too close to proximity, they'll start fighting.
on the subcontinent, why bother with getting in this one?
All the information is that they're costing very, very Egyptian soldiers. I think that's clear now that they are. But on this other thing, I think that the Secretary General is right, that the more it appears that there are things in the works, the easier it is for Saddam. If it appears that everything is ended, then Saddam is going to be under more domestic pressure. If he's able to say, well, the army's going down,
there's something in the UN is doing something about today. Probably helping to try and keep it down. Because we got also a note from the Mr. President saying that they are not ready, Egyptians, that they are not ready for counter solutions because of this phantom deliverance, etc. They want to negotiate through the United Nations, again, etc. So one sees clearly that for the time being they don't expect too much on the substance of the matter. So therefore, I think moves like the one I suggested will perhaps help us to overcome this rather negative period in the decisions.
Okay, now you have another question. Let me just say this, that I want to, so you will know how we can keep in communication in the future. We have in George Bush an ambassador who has my total confidence and the Secretary's total confidence. Absolutely. He is not basically a Foreign Service man, which is no reflection on Foreign Service, but you know he is. The fact that he is a political ambassador means that the thing that resonates the word and that means to you is that you can talk to him as if you were talking to us. The second thing you should know is that he's, and I can say this in his presence, hoping we will never buy it, he is discreet. Whenever you have a problem, I mean, there are times you may not want to escalate a problem to the level of the Secretary and myself. So you have a problem that involves us, and you want to just throw it out in the air for consideration, talk to George about it, and he will pass it on. But I can assure you that he has our total confidence, and we'll have a line of communication here that is very good. And whenever you feel that there's something that you want to take up with Secretary Rogers and me, we don't want to be so close to you that we hurt you. But on the other hand, we don't want to be so far away from you that we also hurt you. So it's a very we know we're on a delicate line. We are very, as politicians, and we're all that in this room, as politicians, we know you have the most difficult political job in the world. I would only strongly urge that if anything at this point, what is needed is a rather strong image of a strong leader in that Secretary General rather than a caretaker. And I think that after the years of the Utah regime, which probably served its purpose in that time, you're coming in at a critical time that could be very important. And if you can demonstrate the vigor, the imagination, the toughness, the fairness, call like you will, take the big boys on and the little boys too, this could be very helpful.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'm very happy to have George Bush as your ambassador in New York. We are really good friends, I can say this, and I appreciate very much this friendship. It helps me a lot to discuss delicate things, because there is
telephone is very useful if you want to, or just talk to me.
know, too, is you, if you go around the country and you're asked questions, I think you should indicate that we've had a good chat and that, the President and the Secretary of State assured you of the continued United States support of the UN. We believe it's very important that it get greater support in this country and in the world. We want to succeed in its ventures. We believe that wherever possible, like in the subcontinent, these great efforts for rehabilitation and rest of the UN is an instrument that should be used rather than put aside. These are things that, in other words, you can vouch for that.
Well, I'm going to get
that. In other words, that you have a friend down here.
Thank you. Conversation. Thank you very much for spending so much time
with you. We wish you well.
Thank you very much, and may I
wish you well. I heard from that one event, but I don't object that his wife is going to be